The first child said, if I had a wish, I would wish for a Big Mac hamburger.
Yang pertama mengatakan, saya menginginkan sebuah hamburger besar.
The second child said, if I had a wish, I would wish for a McDonald's restaurant. Then I can have many hamburgers whenever I want.
Yang kedua mengatakan, saya ingin memiliki restoran McDonald's, sehingga saya mempunyai semua hamburger yang ada di sana.
So already the second child had done much better than the first child.
Yang pertama, yang kedua telah melakukan hal yang lebih baik daripada yang pertama.
So they asked the third child, if you had a wish, what would it be? He said, if I had a wish, I would have $1 billion. US of course.
Iya. Yang ketiga mengatakan, saya menginginkan $1 juta.
With $1 billion, I could buy my own McDonald's restaurant. Then I would buy a video game store. Then I would buy my own school. So I never need to do any homework because I own the school.
Beliau mengatakan dengan $1 juta saya bisa mempunyai McDonald's sendiri, bisa membeli bisnis video games, dan bisa membeli sekolah, dan bisa membeli semua hal.
Because then I'd still have much money left to buy whatever else I wanted when I thought about it.
Ya, dan saya masih mempunyai sisa uang yang begitu banyak dan bisa membeli apa yang saya ingin beli.
And the child who only had a McDonald's restaurant thought, oh, how stupid I am. That third child is so smart, he is going to win the wishing game.
Yang kedua yang ingin memiliki restoran McDonald's mengatakan, betapa bodohnya aku. Ternyata yang ketiga masih jauh lebih baik.
But there's two children left.
Masih ada dua lagi anak yang tinggal.
The fourth child said, if I had a wish, I would wish for 3 wishes. That's a wish.
Yang keempat mengatakan, kalau saya boleh mempunyai keinginan, saya ingin punya 3 keinginan.
For my first wish, I would have McDonald's restaurant. For my second wish, I'll have $1 billion US.
Yang pertama beliau ingin punya restoran McDonald's, yang kedua pengen punya $1 juta.
And for my third wish, I'll have 3 more wishes.
Dan yang ketiga, saya masih ingin 3 permintaan lagi.
That way I can go on forever.
Itulah menyebabkan saya bisa meneruskan hidup saya selamanya.
And the first 3 children thought, that is the genius. He must win the wishing game. How can you do better than have an infinity of wishes?
Iya, jadi mereka berpikir, wah ini sudah luar biasa wishes yang dia buat. Bagaimana cara memenangkan pertandingan ini tadi dari yang keempat ini?
But there was one child left.
Masih ada satu anak lagi yang tertinggal.
He won the wishing game.
Dia memenangkan wishing game itu.
He won it.
He won it. Yeah. Dia memenangkan ya permainan itu.
He won it. He became the champion.
Yeah. Dia pemenangnya, Bante, yang terakhir.
He made a wish which was even better than having all your wishes fulfilled.
Dia membuat satu keinginan permintaan yang bahkan lebih baik daripada yang lainnya.
He said, I wish, if I had a wish, I wish I was so content I never needed any more wishes ever again.
Beliau mengatakan, beliau menginginkan satu kebahagiaan dan yang lain tidak diperlukan lagi sama sekali.
That's the Buddha.
Itulah Buddha.
The end of craving. End of craving, end of wishing.
Okay.
Now you understand why it doesn't matter if you are lonely or if you are with a husband, if you are sick, if you are poor, if you are a senior monk or a junior monk, if you are content to be here, then you're enlightened.
Tidak peduli apakah Anda kesepian, dalam keadaan sakit, miskin. Apakah biku senior, biku muda, jika Anda bahagia berada di sini, maka Anda sudah mengalami sebuah kebahagiaan.
Because the Buddha said, enlightenment is the end of craving. Thank you.
Beliau katakan bahwa akhir dari pencapaian kita, pencarian kita adalah pencerahan. Baik. Dan sekarang kita buka sesi tanya jawab. Now is Q&A time, right? Okay.
But I'm going to start with telling you a story from the sutras, from the Majjhima Nikaya. Buddhism teaches rebirth or reincarnation and karma.
Agama Buddha mengajarkan tentang kelahiran kembali dan hukum karma.
In one of the sutras, the Buddha taught why some people are born beautiful in their next lives while other people are born ugly.
Dalam satu sutta, Buddha menjelaskan kenapa orang lahir tampan, cakep gitu ya, dan yang lain lahir dalam kondisi yang tidak baik atau jelek.
He taught the karmic reason, the karma which makes some people wealthy while other people are poor.
Karmalah yang menyebabkan seseorang hidup dalam keadaan kaya, dan karma juga menyebabkan seseorang hidup dalam keadaan miskin.
In particular, he taught the karma you have to do to be reborn intelligent in your next life, and why some people will be reborn stupid in their next life.
Secara khusus, beliau juga menjelaskan bagaimana orang bisa lahir menjadi cerdas dan bagaimana orang bisa lahir menjadi bodoh.
He taught that the karma which makes you stupid in your next life is not asking questions in this one.
Yang menyebabkan kita bodoh pada kehidupan berikutnya adalah karena kita tidak pernah mau bertanya.
So any questions?
Terima kasih. Nama saya Saparindi dari Hikmah Budi.
Ya.
Pertanyaan saya adalah bahwa dalam kondisi masyarakat sosial saat ini gitu kan, banyak kemiskinan yang luar biasa istilahnya. Dalam artian untuk mencari kebahagiaan itu sangat sulit.
Ya.
Terutama dalam konteks bahwa di era globalisasi ini, kemiskinan itu bisa dibuat gitu loh. Dan orang itu sangat butuh dengan yang namanya uang. Kalau misalnya uang gak punya, yang namanya kejahatan itu akan mudah sangat dilakukan. Nah, bagaimana proses itu dalam Buddhisme menjawab di apa namanya, dalam konteks bahwa ada hubungan dalam era globalisasi ini, kemiskinan bisa dibuat dan itu membuat satu faktor kejahatan tersendiri. Terima kasih.
Selamat malam, terima kasih kesempatannya. Saya Mutia dari Tangerang.
Silakan Mutia.
Yang saya ingin tanyakan tidak beda dengan kemiskinan yang seperti tadi ditanyakan,
ya.
Tapi gampang aja.
Ya.
Tadi Ajan menerangkan kita harus melepas gelas. Bagaimana kita mau melepas gelas? Kehidupan kita besok mau makan aja nggak tahu, bagaimana bayar uang sekolah aja susah. Bagaimana harus melepas? Itu pertanyaan saya. Terima kasih.
Iya, tapi jangan marah-marah. Kok marah-marahnya ke saya? Saya kan cuma kasih kesempatan sama sampean.
Nama saya An.
Iya Pak.
Saya mau tanya mengenai karma ya.
Iya.
Kalau bagaimana seseorang yang dalam kehidupan sekarang ini karmanya buruk, bagaimana mengatasi supaya karma buruk ini untuk sekarang ini bisa dilalui gitu? Terima kasih.
Oke, baik. Pertanyaannya mendasar ya Pak ya.
Who is the poorest people in this room?
Siapa orang termiskin di ruangan ini? Angkat tangan.
I haven't got any money. I haven't got a bank account. When I arrived this morning at the airport, I'd never had any baggage. No baggage.
Beliau tidak pernah punya uang, ya. Beliau tidak pernah punya apa-apa istilahnya, tapi beliau tetap bisa bahagia.
So the point is, who is really poor? Sometimes put your hand up if you have enough money.
Siapa yang, pertanyaannya adalah siapa yang merasa dirinya sangat miskin dan siapa yang merasa cukup punya uang? Silakan angkat tangan.
No one. The point is that we could always have more. But can we be satisfied sometimes at how much do we really need?
Iya, persoalannya adalah kita bisa mempunyai apa yang kita inginkan, tapi sampai batas mana kepuasan kita itu gitu ya.
Sometimes as long as you have a small house, you have food, you have clothes to wear, you have medicines in time of sickness, what the Buddha called the four requisites, that's enough. If you got more, wonderful, well done. Share it, enjoy it. But you know the minimum, if you got a house to live in, you got clothes to wear, you have food and medicines in time of sickness. If you have that, then you have enough.
Dan beliau mengatakan sebenarnya kita, kalau kita masih punya makanan untuk dimakan, pakaian untuk dipakai, dan rumah untuk kita tinggal, serta masih memiliki obat-obatan, maka itu sudahlah cukup.
When I was a young monk, I remember going into the village in Thailand. There was no electricity.
Ketika beliau muda, beliau pernah masuk ke sebuah Thailand, pedalaman Thailand, di mana tidak ada aliran listrik.
Everyone lived in very small houses. In the evening, I saw on the upper story, on the balcony, there was maybe 16 or 17 people every evening around a small lamp. There were the grandparents, the uncles, the aunts, the parents, the cousins, and all the children. Every evening they would be together telling stories to each other.
Jadi beliau melihat keprihatinan di Thailand itu di bagian atas. Ada di rumah kecil, ada 16 sampai 17 orang yang berkumpul di sana, saling bercerita, dan mereka terdiri dari orang kakek, nenek, cucu, juga paman dan keponakan dan lain-lain.
Today the children have got sometimes their own rooms, their own televisions. They have lots of wealth, but they are lonely. In the days of poverty, so-called poverty, people had each other. They were never lonely, and they were very happy. They had family. Sometimes I think that maybe we are rich with things, but we are poor in our hearts.
Jadi beliau katakan, sekarang anak-anak yang tadi bersenda gurau di rumah kecil tadi, sekarang sudah memiliki TV dan rumah sendiri, tapi mereka mengalami kesepian. Kenapa? Karena hati mereka mengalami kesepian.
So I really think that as long as one has enough to survive, if one makes more, then do charity, enjoy your well-earned wealth, as long as it's according to principles, to Dhamma, you can enjoy that wealth, make merit, that's wonderful. But if you don't have wealth, you can still be very, very happy.
Jika kita bisa puas dengan kondisi kita dan tetap melakukan donasi, charity, perbuatan baik untuk orang lain, kemudian kita menjaga sila kita, tetap melakukan perbuatan baik, maka kita akan menjadi orang yang bahagia.
Ya.
Baik, sudah cukup menjawabkah pertanyaan dari Saudara Safarindi? Tadi Anda kan bertanya kemiskinan ya, masalah kemiskinan. Sudah bisa cukup ya? Belum. Kalau belum nanti sebentar ya. Saya tanya yang kedua dulu tadi. Yang kedua adalah Mutia. Mutia bagaimana bisa menerima jawaban? Sudah cukup? Cukup ya, terima kasih. Ya, Anda belum cukup ya, silakan. Safarindi, silakan di feedback sekali saja ya.
Pada prinsipnya saya setuju apa yang diungkapkan tadi.
Iya.
Bahwa kemiskinan dengan model standar seperti itu oke, gitu kan. Tapi ada satu buku yang menarik yang saya coba lihat dan baca. Itu orang miskin dilarang sekolah dan orang miskin dilarang sakit. Berarti intinya adalah bahwa materi menjadi ukuran. Ketika kita sakit, ketika orang miskin lah ya, sakit. Untuk masuk rumah sakit harus store dulu minimal 2 juta gitu kan. Apalagi kalau misalnya operasi. Aduh luar biasa itu model seperti itu.
Yeah.
Ya oke okay, mungkin itu aja sih. Argumennya bahwa ketika kondisi standar oke okay, kita bisa. Tapi ketika kita dalam misalnya sakit terus untuk sekolah segala macam gitu kan, itu sangat diukur dengan materi. Dan bagaimana kebahagiaan bisa menjadi relevan dengan materi yang ada sekarang saat ini, apalagi zaman globalisasi semua kayaknya diukur dengan materi. Terima kasih.
Okay, my teacher once predicted in the future we'd run out of paper for banknotes, we'd run out of metal for coins, so the governments of the world would have to try and find something else to use. Ajahn Chah said, in the future, they would use chicken dung, chicken pellets. Physically, it would be chicken shit.
What's that?
Little pellets for the chicken comes out the back. Chicken dung.
What's that? Oh, chicken dung, sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, chicken.
They would use chicken dung for money. You would fill your pockets with chicken dung. You would fill your purses with chicken dung. And you would try and fight who has the most chicken dung, whether you have more than your neighbor. What is the difference between money and chicken dung, he was saying. The point was that sometimes that money can make things available, but sometimes the greed for money Sometimes the reason we have to go to hospital in the first place is because we're so stressed out trying to make money. And so many illnesses in our world are caused by stress. That's why we have to go to hospital. In many countries, it's okay to have enough money, but how much money do you need? It's good to have money to go to schools and hospitals, but I think that most countries in our world, you can go to school, you can go to hospital for free. I'm not sure in Indonesia, but in many countries in the West, that health is a given for free. There's many charitable hospitals. Many Buddhists build hospitals and schools. We don't think of money. We think of just scholarships. And I think sometimes, how much money do we really need? So, what I'm saying, look, is a story I read recently. A father came home from work, and his six-year-old son asked him, "Daddy, how much do you earn every hour at work?"
Okay, jadi begini, tadi kalau kita lihat Ajan sempat agak serius ya masalah uang ya. Jadi saya akan mengambil poin ini aja. Jadi kalau kita serakah, kita rakus akan uang, pertanyaan Ajan adalah seberapa banyak uang yang kita mau raih. Sebanyak apapun tidak pernah akan ada cukup-cukupnya. Begitu yang Ajan katakan. Jadi artinya, kemudian Ajan mengatakan di negara-negara barat ya, tapi di Australia setahu saya, nanti saya akan coba tanya ya. Di Australia mereka juga bayar tapi 20% ya. Gak tahu di negara lain. Saya waktu itu mesti bayar 100% sebagai mahasiswa asing ya. Beliau katakan di negara barat itu banyak yang free untuk rumah sakit. Free untuk sekolah. Kita bisa memohon ya beasiswa dan seterusnya. Kemudian yang kedua, beliau akan bercerita tentang seorang ayah yang ketika pulang dari kerjanya ditanya oleh anaknya berumur 6 tahun. Berapa sih sebenarnya uang yang ayah peroleh untuk 1 jam bekerja?
So he asked the child asked his father, "How much do you earn an hour?" His father said, "That's nothing to do with you. Be quiet, I'm tired." The child asked again, "How much do you earn an hour, Daddy?" He said, "Be quiet, I'm tired." He asked a third time, "Daddy, how many dollars do you earn an hour?" His father got so upset, he said, "Go to your room."
Jadi anak ini terus bertanya, "Ayah, berapa sih sebenarnya uang yang ayah peroleh untuk 1 jam bekerja?" Kemudian ayahnya bilang, "Diam, jangan banyak bertanya. Ya, saya capek," gitu. Anaknya bertanya kedua kali, juga dijawab dengan cara yang sama, "Ayah capek, jangan banyak bertanya." Dan yang ketiga, ayahnya menjadi begitu marah dan menyuruh anaknya masuk ke kamar tidurnya.
So the child went to his room. Half an hour later, when the father had arrested, he felt so guilty that he shouted at his son. So he went to the son's room, knocked on the door and asked to go in. And said, "I don't know why you asked me that, son. If you really want to know, I earn $20 an hour."
Setengah jam berikutnya, sang ayah merasa sangat bersalah. Kemudian dia datang ke kamar anaknya, mengetuk pintu dan masuk ke dalam. Kemudian dia berkata kepada anaknya, "Jika kamu benar-benar ingin tahu berapa yang ayah peroleh 1 jam bekerja, maka ayah memperoleh $20 untuk 1 jam bekerja."
The son smiled and said, "Daddy, can I borrow $10?
Anaknya tersenyum dan kemudian mengatakan, "Ayah, bolehkah aku meminjam $10?
The father was about to get angry but didn't want to shout at his son. So he said, "I don't know why you need $10, but here's $10.
Ayahnya hampir marah, tapi dia mengatakan, "Saya tidak tahu kenapa kamu meminta $10, tapi okelah, karena itu kamu minta, ini bisa dipinjamkan $10.
So the son took the $10. He reached under his pillow and counted out another $10 which he'd saved. Now he had $20. He gave it to his father and said, "Daddy, can I have an hour of your time, please?"
Ya, ini sebenarnya kisahnya sangat menyentuh ya. Saya bersyukur juga kok hari ini dipilih juga sama Ajan ya ceritanya. Jadi artinya anak itu setelah mendapatkan 10 dolar dari sang ayah, kemudian dia mengambil lagi koin dari balik bantalnya yang ternyata 10 dolar, kemudian dia hitung, dia gabungkan dengan hasil pinjaman atau uang pemberian ayah jadi 20 dolar, kemudian dia berikan 20 dolar kepada ayahnya dan berkata, "Ayah, sekarang aku punya 20 dolar. Bolehkah aku beli waktumu 1 jam?"
Sometimes our children, they want our time, not our money.
Kadang-kadang anak-anak kita bukan membutuhkan uang kita, tapi membutuhkan waktu kita.
Sometimes your wife, your husband needs your time, not your gifts.
Kadang-kadang suami istri kita bukan membutuhkan hadiah-hadiah, tapi membutuhkan waktu kita. Okay, so in today's life, when we are facing, undergoing the bad karma, how to face it and how to overcome the bad karma?
Okay, bad karma is like having a lot of, dung.
Karma buruk sama dengan kita mempunyai tai.
Dung, yeah.
Tai. Enggak sopan. Pelan-pelan lah, di sini ada bante kan saya agak.
It's very smelly.
Sangat,
very unpleasant.
Sangat bau dan sangat tidak menyenangkan.
That's like bad karma.
Itu sama dengan karma buruk.
But dung makes good fertilizer.
Tapi tai kotoran. Ibu Kamel, terima kasih.
So take the dung and dig it under your mango tree.
Jadi artinya tadi kotoran bisa menjadi pupuk dan bisa menyuburkan pohon mangga Anda.
And then you get very sweet mangoes.
Dan Anda akan menuai mangga yang manis sekali.
But always remember when you taste the mango that came from the dung.
Ingatlah selalu ketika Anda menikmati mangga manis itu juga datang dari kotoran.
So when you have bad karma, learn from it.
Jika Anda mengalami karma buruk, belajarlah dari karma buruk itu.
Then when you become wise and compassionate, all the sweetness of your compassion, all the depth of your wisdom, that all came from your bad karma.
Iya, jadi kita akan menjadi wise, bijaksana dan penuh cinta kasih, kita bisa belajar sesuatu dari karma buruk itu.
So stop complaining about your bad karma. Make a nice mango tree out of it.
Hentikanlah mengeluhkan tentang karma buruk, tapi marilah kita membuat pohon mangga yang bagus, yang buahnya manis tadi.
Okay.
Cukup Pak An? Cukup ya Pak ya. Ya nanti Pak pulang silakan langsung ditanam Pak ya. Okay, there is a very nice question from Eddie Gunawan in Serang, West Java.
Very good.
Betul ya? Okay. The question is how to face the questions sometimes from the non-Buddhist groups, non-Buddhist people that defame Buddhism.
Okay. How do you face the questions from non-Buddhists who defame Buddhism? They cannot defame Buddhism. They can only make you upset.
Mereka tidak. Pertanyaannya begini ya. Maaf saya baca tadi. Sorry. Let me read the Indonesian first, Ajahn. Bagaimana menjawab pertanyaan-pertanyaan dari orang non-Buddhis yang sering memojokkan Buddhis? Ya, Ajahn tadi mengatakan dalam kalimat pertamanya yaitu tidak ada orang yang bisa memojokkan Buddhis. Orang hanya bisa memojokkan Anda. Ya?
It is like when the Taliban destroyed the Buddha statues at Bamiyan.
Sama seperti orang Taliban menghancurkan patung Buddha di Pakistan, ya?
Yes.
Afghanistan.
Yes.
Yeah.
You can destroy a Buddha statue, but you cannot destroy Buddhism.
Anda bisa menghancurkan patung atau Buddha rupang, tapi Anda tidak bisa menghancurkan Buddha Dhamma.
Because the Buddhists did not respond with anger or with violence. In other words, the Buddhist principles of tolerance, of peace, of forgiveness, of compassion withstood what happened. So if anyone defames what you think is Buddhism, make sure you don't allow them to destroy peace, tolerance, forgiveness, and compassion. And then they never can destroy Buddhism.
Dan beliau mengatakan bahwa umat Buddha tidak diajarkan untuk mengatasi persoalan penyerangan tadi dengan kemarahan, dengan kekerasan, tapi kita harus mengemukakan toleransi, kedamaian, cinta kasih, belas kasihan, dan seterusnya dalam menyikapi persoalan tadi.
For example, sometimes people try and make you upset by defaming you.
Sebagai contoh, kadang-kadang ada orang yang membuat kita marah atau melecehkan kita.
Many years ago, during the Vietnam War, there was an American Air Force base close to my master Ajahn Chah's temple.
Beberapa tahun yang lalu, pada perang Vietnam, ada sebuah pesawat udara Amerika melewati tempat Ajahn Chah berada.
One day, an American soldier was going in a cycle rickshaw from the base into town.
Suatu hari ada seorang prajurit yang menaiki becak menuju kota.
On the journey, they passed a bar. Some of the driver's friends were drinking whiskey. They were almost drunk. They pointed to the American in the back of the rickshaw and shouted out, "Where are you taking that dirty dog to?"
Dirty?
Dog. Woof woof.
Okay. Ketika dia melewati sebuah bar, ada orang yang lagi mabuk dan mereka berkata, "Kenapa Anda membawa seekor
dirty dog?"
Anjing kotor.
Calling someone a dog means a fight.
Memanggil seseorang sebagai anjing sama dengan membuka perang.
But the soldier in the back was so peaceful, the driver thought he cannot understand the Thai language.
Orang yang diteriakin itu begitu tenang dan damai, dan si penarik becak tadi berpikir bahwa orang ini tidak mengerti bahasa Thai.
So he pointed to the soldier and said in Thai, "I am taking this filthy dog and throwing him in the river for a wash."
Tukang becak itu mengatakan, "Saya membawa orang ini, anjing ini, untuk dicuci di sungai."
So the driver and his friends laughed, but the soldier was so peaceful.
Semua orang tertawa, tapi si penumpang itu tetap damai saja.
When they got into town, the soldier got out of the cycle rickshaw and started to walk away without paying.
Dan setelah sampai di kota, orang soldier itu, prajurit itu turun dan tidak membayar.
So the driver said in the best English he could, "Soldier, money, dollars."
Dan si penarik becak itu mencoba menggunakan bahasa Inggris sebaik yang dia bisa. Prajurit, uang, dolar.
And so the soldier turned around and said in perfect Thai, "Dogs don't have money."
Dan prajurit tadi balik dan menjawab dengan bahasa Thai yang sempurna, "Anjing tidak punya uang."
So if you don't allow people to make you upset, they can defame you, they can defame Buddhism, but don't get upset and you will always win.
Jika Anda tidak terpengaruh, tidak menjadi marah, orang menyerang Anda maupun menyerang Buddha Dhamma, maka Anda tidak pernah akan menjadi marah.
Okay,
ya. Cukup ya yang tadi bertanya.
My name is Harry, I'm from Bali.
Okay.
First of all, thank you Ajahn Brahm for coming to giving this Dhamma talk. My question is, how do you explain two seemingly contradiction idea of being content and satisfied versus expanding yourself to the fullest? What I mean is, if you wishing no more, then you couldn't grow. So say that Buddha, when he was Siddhartha Gautama, when he was young, and he felt that very content and satisfied, and he doing no more meditation, then he wouldn't become enlightened. So I would like you please explain so that people don't misunderstand this. Thank you very much.
Okay. So for Buddha or anybody that one, remember the Buddha was absolutely content after he became enlightened. And so he didn't want to speak at all. He didn't want to teach. It was only when Dharma Sahagati came down and asked him to teach. So contentment plus compassion. So when you're content, you don't want anything for yourself. With compassion, you just want to give to others. That's the Buddha. You don't want anything for yourself. You just want to give others. That's what makes you active in the world. So be compassionate. The Buddha was a great compassionate person, so he expended himself for, was it 45 years, teaching for other beings. So that's actually how one can practice the Buddha.
As an arahant, be content so one doesn't need anything for oneself, the end of all wishes, so that one can devote your life totally to other beings. Understand?
Yeah. Sorry. Sebentar ya, saya coba ngambil sarinya aja dulu. Ajahn mengatakan bahwa kalau kita punya keadaan konten, keadaan bahagia, keadaan senang, maka... Oh, puas. Ya, Bante. Kalau kita merasa puas, ya... Maka kita akan seperti Buddha, kita akan berbagi kepada orang lain. Kita tidak memikirkan diri sendiri. Buddha Gautama menyebarkan Buddha Dhamma selama 45 tahun. Dan beliau membaktikan, mengabdikan dirinya untuk orang lain, orang banyak. Silakan tadi Anda mau mengatakan, mau menyambung? Silakan bisa dikasih lagi ke Harry.
What I'm saying is that you are not, well, we are not perfect right now. So if you are not perfect, then you need to grow further to reach this enlightened one. Mm-hmm. So if, say that I am just being like this now, and I'm just being happy and content, then I wouldn't become improve my mental stage. So I just wanna make you qualify this one.
Okay. Well, for the very least, try and be more content. Mm-hmm. So, for a lot of time that we are holding our cup too long, at least learn how to put it down from time to time. That's called contentment. Picking it up and carrying it is called compassion for the world, doing things. So when there's something to do, give it everything you've got. Mm-hmm. Not just for yourself, but for your family, for your religion, for your country. Do service. When you are growing, you're not growing for yourself. You're growing for your family, you're growing for your nation, for your community. So give it everything you've got out of compassion. Be selfless. And when it's time to rest, just let go completely and learn how to really relax. Mm-hmm. When there's nothing to do, then do nothing. If you can do that, you'll be a very successful person in the world. I'll tell you another story. It's a very famous Buddhist story. A man was being chased by a tiger in the jungle. Mm. You want to start the story?
Yeah. Jadi beliau sih sebenarnya intinya bolak-balik mengatakan bahwa kita harus mengembangkan belas kasih ya, atau karuna lah ya, compassionate dalam diri kita, dan melakukan pelayanan terhadap orang lain. Dan kalau kita pun mau bertumbuh, marilah kita bertumbuh dengan komunitas kita, dengan orang-orang lain, bukan dengan diri sendiri. Jadi harus memikirkan orang lain juga dalam pengembangan diri kita. Kemudian beliau mulai akan bercerita tentang seseorang yang dikejar oleh seekor harimau.
So a man was being chased by a tiger in the jungle. The tiger was gaining on him. Out of desperation, he saw a well in the middle of the jungle. He jumped in to the well to escape the tiger. As soon as he jumped in, he realized he'd made a mistake. The well was dry. In the bottom of the well was a big black snake.
Dan kemudian karena dikejar, beliau orang tersebut melihat sebuah sumur tua. Kemudian dia melompat ke dalam, berpikir akan selamat. Tapi ternyata di dalam sumur itu kering dan ada seekor ular hitam, ya.
Automatically, he reached for the side of the well. He grabbed onto a root of a tree sticking out of the well. It stopped his fall. When he came to his senses, the snake had been disturbed, had raised its head, opened its hood, and was trying to strike him on his feet. But his feet were just too high. The tiger was leaning over the well, trying to paw him. But his hands were just too low.
Jadi artinya dia kemudian tadi melompat, kemudian tersangkut ya, atau menangkap akar-akar yang ada di situ, dan ular tadi pelan-pelan menaikkan kepalanya dan mencaplok gitu ya, mencaplok kaki orang tersebut. Jadi kakinya terlalu panjang, kemudian tangannya pendek saja, maksudnya ular itu. Jadi akhirnya bisa kecaplok oleh ular tersebut.
Sorry, what? The tiger.
Yeah.
Leaning over the well, trying to paw him.
Oh.
Try to catch him with his
paws. Try to paw him and then.
No, try to catch him with his hands.
Okay.
Nails.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Sorry. Artinya tangan harimau tadi. Dia berusaha untuk menangkap orang yang tadi jatuh yang memegang akar yang ada di samping di dalam sumur itu ya, gitu ya.
So he had a tiger above him, a snake below him.
Ya, jadi ada harimau di atas, ada ular di bawah.
And then he saw two mice come out from a hole in the well and start chewing on his root, making it thinner and thinner. And thinner.
Two mice.
Yeah, mice.
Dan dia melihat ada dua ekor tikus yang siap untuk juga menyerangnya, maka membuat dia semakin kurus, kurus dan kurus.
Mouse.
Yeah, mouse and then.
And they're eating his roots.
Oh, sorry. Saya udah nggak konsen lagi. Jadi artinya tikus itu menggerogoti talinya sedikit demi sedikit dan tali itu menjadi semakin tipis dan tipis, gitu maksudnya ya.
So he was in big trouble.
Dan dia dalam masalah besar.
But because the tiger was leaning over the well, the back of the tiger was rubbing against the tree, making it shake. On a branch of the tree was a beehive. Honey started to drip down the well. He put out his tongue and tasted the honey. It was so sweet. And that was the end of the story.
Dan madu itu, dan harimau itu kan mencoba menangkap si, menangkap siapa tadi ya? Menangkap orang itu. Kemudian karena dia bergoyang-goyang, kemudian di pohon itu tempat si harimau itu ada, kan ada beehive itu apa ya, madu ya, sarang tawon, sarang lebah, dan sarang lebah itu meneteskan madunya dan orang tersebut menikmatinya dan dia merasa wah ini sungguh luar biasa enaknya, begitu ya.
Because sometimes our life is like that. We are in big danger. We may have cancer. We may be in big danger with thieves. We may have business is not going well, and sometimes it's like that. We have a tiger above us, we have a snake underneath us, and the mice are chewing at our precarious hold on life. There's always honey dripping down. Make sure you always enjoy the honey of the present moment.
Ya, jadi Ajahn mengatakan sama dengan kehidupan kita sehari-hari, kadang kita mungkin mengalami penyakit kanker, bisnis kita berjalan tidak baik, dan seperti ada harimau di atas, ada ular di bawah, ada tikus-tikus yang menggerogoti tali kita. Jadi Ajahn mengatakan pastikan bahwa kita menikmati setiap saat dalam hidup kita sekarang ini.
Because I thought the ending of the story would be this. That the tiger would lean over a little too far. And he would fall into the well, missing the man, crushing the snake, and breaking its own neck.
Akhir cerita yang beliau pikirkan sebenarnya adalah harimau itu jatuh, membentur ular, ularnya mati, dan akhirnya harimau itu membenturkan kepalanya sendiri ke dinding sumur dan mati.
Because the unexpected things are always the ones which happen. If we are too afraid, then we never know how to relax and be able to do something when it's time to do it.
Ya, kadang-kadang dalam keadaan takut kita tidak pernah bisa merelaksasi pikiran kita, sehingga kita juga kadang tidak tahu apa yang harus kita lakukan.
It's similar to another story I heard when I was a school teacher. One of my friends was in the British Army during the Second World War in Burma fighting the Japanese.
Ya, jadi ada ketika beliau sekolah pernah ada satu kisah teman beliau of Vietnamese.
Now in Burma,
ya,
fighting the Japanese in the Second World War.
Di Burma pernah ada sebuah perang di Second World War.
Yes.
Di perang kedua.
In Burma. He was in Burma. Yes. He was a British soldier fighting the Japanese in the jungles of Burma.
Ya, jadi pada perang dunia kedua ada seorang soldier, prajurit Inggris berperang dengan seorang Jepang di pedalaman Burma.
He told me that once he was only with a small number of soldiers, maybe about 8 or 10 British soldiers, and they walked into a trap. They were soon surrounded by a large number, hundreds of Japanese soldiers, completely surrounded with no way out.
So you mean the British is 8 to 10?
No, the British, there was only 10 of their soldiers.
Okay.
They were on a patrol, and they went into a trap, and soon they were surrounded by hundreds of Japanese soldiers with no way out.
Ya, jadi artinya ada 8 sampai 10 prajurit Inggris yang ada di sana, dan mereka sudah dikepung, ya, dikepung oleh 100 prajurit Jepang, ya.
He thought he was about to die. It was war. They were heavily outnumbered. There was no way out. He thought the only thing to do was to try and fight your way out. Maybe one might escape. Even if no one escaped, you could kill some of the enemy. That was what soldiers were supposed to do.
Jadi artinya mereka menyadari bahwa jumlah mereka kurang dari jumlah yang ada di pihak lawan, sehingga mereka berjuang keras untuk perang, ya, memenangkan itu, karena mereka berpikir bahwa dalam perang kita harus bisa selamat dan menyelamatkan diri.
But the captain of the British soldiers said, "No, we will not fight. We will all sit down and have a cup of tea."
Dan prajurit Inggris mengatakan, "Tidak, kami tidak akan berperang. Mari kita duduk bersama sambil minum kopi. Teh. Minum teh."
The British Army, they like tea. American Army like coffee.
Tentara Inggris suka teh.
My friend thought the captain was crazy. How can you think of having a cup of tea in war? When you're surrounded by the enemy, about to die. He thought his leader was crazy.
Bagaimana dalam kondisi Anda mau mati, Anda mau diserang, Anda masih menyempatkan diri untuk minum teh?
But in an army, especially at war, you have to follow orders. So he sat down with his friends and made what he thought would be his last cup of tea.
Dan dalam militer, perintah adalah perintah, jadi harus dijalankan. Dan dia menjawab bahwa barangkali itu adalah minuman teh yang terakhir.
But in the time it took them to make the tea, one of the soldiers came back and told them, "The Japanese army have moved. There is a way out." So the captain said, "Put away all your things. Let's move quickly. Now we can escape." And they did, which is why he could tell me the story.
Dan ketika mereka akan membuat teh, ternyata mereka mendapatkan kabar bahwa orang prajurit Jepang itu sudah pindah, ya, sudah tidak ada di sana lagi. Maka singkirkan semua bahan-bahan untuk membuat teh tadi. Mari kita melarikan diri, dan orang tersebutlah yang menceritakan kepada Ajahn Brahm.
So it is important. He told me if he'd have tried to fight instead of relaxing and having a cup of tea, he would be dead and all the other British soldiers would be dead. When there was nothing to do, he relaxed. So he was ready. When there was something to do, he could take advantage and escape. He said he owed his life to the wisdom of that British captain. And now, whenever there's a big problem, if there's nothing to do, he relaxes and waits for the time when he can really be effective. And that's why he was such a success in his life. When there's nothing to do, do nothing. Relax. When there's something to do, then give it everything you've got.
Iya, jadi intisarinya adalah kita harus belajar. Kalau memang sudah tidak ada lagi yang bisa kita kerjakan, Ajahn mengatakan seperti cerita tadi, menyaluti kebijaksanaan dari kapten tersebut. Beliau sudah merasa bahwa ini terkepung, gak mungkin keluar. Jadi mari kita minum teh dulu, kita relax dulu sambil menunggu waktu yang tepat untuk melakukan sebuah tindakan lain. Dan ternyata itu memang menghasilkan sesuatu. Sama dengan kehidupan kita, Ajahn katakan tadi, kita harus bisa belajar ini. Jadi menunggu waktu yang tepat untuk melakukan sesuatu. Kalau memang sudah tidak bisa, ya mari kita hentikan. Nanti kita relax dulu, baru kita bisa cari sesuatu yang lebih baik. Kita mulai lagi. Okay, this is a very interesting question. Kalau ngobrol gini saya lebih enjoy sebenarnya. Gak usah diterjemahin. Is heaven in Buddhism the same as heaven in other religions? Apakah surga di Buddhis sama dengan surga di agama lain? Please.
Oh yes. Because many years ago, a samurai warrior came up to a monk. He wanted to find out whether there was a heaven, whether there was a hell. He'd read it in the books, but you cannot believe what you read in the books. Some people tell him, yes, there's a heaven, but they find it hard to describe it. What about a hell? So he went up to this very famous and good monk and said, Venerable Sir, I respect you. You are a good monk, an honest monk. Can you please tell me whether there's a heaven and a hell? If you don't know, just say you don't know. But I want to find out the truth. Is there a heaven or is there a hell? Okay. And the monk looked up to him and said, You're too stupid to understand. The samurai said, I am not stupid. I am a samurai warrior. I am very intelligent, highly trained. Do not call me stupid. And the monk looked up and said, You, a samurai warrior, you probably wouldn't even get to school. And he said, Listen, I am very intelligent. Don't insult me again, otherwise I'll cut off your head with my sword. And the monk looked at his sword and said, You could not even cut bread with that sword. And the samurai, being very proud, was very angry. He had been ridiculed. So he got out his sword, and angrily he was about to strike the monk's head off. And the monk looked up at him and said, Samurai, that is hell. The samurai realized that anger is hell. Now that monk was pushing his luck. He was very lucky. But the samurai understood. You monks, don't try that. Because the samurai understood, he thought, at last, there is a wise person to show me what hell was. Hell is anger. So he went down on his hands and knees, and he bowed to that holy monk, that wise monk. Oh, you're so wise. You're so compassionate. At last, I've got an answer. I can understand what hell is. It's my anger. Oh, thank you so much. As he showed, he started crying with gratitude. And the monk looked at him and smiled and said, Now, samurai, that is heaven. So heaven is the gratitude, is compassion, is peace, is love, metta. That is heaven. If you develop that state of mind, when you go up after you die, that state of mind will define the realm in which you get reborn into. You make it heaven. If you have lots of anger, when you die, you will go to the realm of permanent anger, of hell. As you feel, that's how you'll feel for many, many hundreds of years. That's heaven, that's hell. It doesn't matter whether you're a Buddhist, or whether you're a Catholic, whether you're a Muslim, whatever religion you are, because this is your mind. It doesn't matter if you're Australian or Indonesian. Heaven is the same for all religions, all races, all genders. It is the happiness inside the heart which lasts for many, many, many hundreds of years. That's called heaven. The hell is the same as well. If you have anger, violence in your heart, you are in hell now. You're having a taste of what it will be like after you die.
Ya, ini surga dan neraka, surga yang Anda tanyakan menurut Bante, menurut Ajahn adalah sama. Cerita ini sering diceritakan Bante Panyawaro sebenarnya di beberapa kesempatan ya. Saya pernah mendengar Bante bercerita. Jadi ceritanya itu adalah kisah seorang samurai, seorang warrior yang ingin mengetahui perbedaan antara surga dan neraka. Kemudian dia datang kepada seorang Bante, kepada seorang biku. Kemudian dia bilang, apa itu surga dan neraka? Kan kira-kira seperti itu. Kemudian biku tersebut menjawab melalui apa yang dilakukan oleh si samurai ini sendiri. Ya kan, beliau mengatakan bahwa Anda terlalu bodoh untuk mengerti itu, antara sorga dan neraka. Itu tadi yang Ajahn katakan. Terlalu bodoh untuk mengerti itu. Dan si samurai itu kan menjadi marah sekali gitu ya. Kenapa saya begitu pintar, saya begitu tinggi pangkatnya, kenapa Anda menghina saya seperti itu ya, mengatakan saya bodoh dan seterusnya. Kemudian dia pun dengan marahnya menarik samurainya keluar dari sarungnya dan siap untuk memenggal kepala sang Bante tersebut. Kemudian Bante tersebut dan marah gitu ya, dan akan memotong kepala si Bante. Dalam kondisi yang begitu dia marahnya, mengeluarkan samurai siap untuk memotong, Bantenya katakan, itulah neraka. Itulah keadaan Anda dalam kondisi neraka. Kemudian orang tersebut begitu mendengar sang Bante mengatakan kalimat seperti itu, dia langsung terenyuh dan tersentuh. Saya belum pernah mendapatkan penjelasan tentang neraka begitu sempurnanya, begitu lengkapnya, sehingga dia merasa begitu berterima kasih kepada biku tersebut, dan dia pun menangis dalam kesedihannya karena telah menyerang biku tersebut. Maka dia pun akhirnya tenang, damai, penuh dengan cinta kasih, tidak lagi marah. Dan pada kondisi seperti itu, Bantenya mengatakan, itulah kondisi sorga. Jadi sorga dan neraka dijelaskan sedemikian. Dan orang tersebut begitu terharu dan mengatakan kepada Bante yang tadi menjelaskan bahwa Anda begitu bijaksana, Anda begitu penuh dengan cinta kasih. Maka setelah dia mengatakan dengan demikian, maka orang tersebut pun mulai menyadari dan mempraktekkan apa yang dikatakan oleh sang Bante tadi. Is that possible to transfer our karma to other people? For example, like in Etawata, we always pray that all living beings happy and so on. Is that possible, Bante?
Yes. Today I've just transferred all my good karma to you by making you happy by teaching you Dhamma.
Bisa ya, hari ini Bante telah mentransfer kebahagiaannya kepada kita melalui Dhamma Talk ini.
Because if you do good karma, you keep precepts, you develop your mind, you're wise and compassionate, all the people you live with, or you meet, you work with, will benefit from your practice of Dhamma. So you see, in that way, whatever you do, you actually share it with others. But careful, you can also share not just merits, you can share demerits as well. If you are heedless, you break your precepts, you give a lot of suffering to your family, to your parents, and to your friends. So you see, whatever you do affects others. If you make merit, you do good, you create happiness for yourself, you automatically create happiness for others.
Ya, jadi Ajahn mengatakan apabila kita tetap melakukan karma-karma baik, menjalankan sila dengan baik, otomatis lingkungan kita, keluarga kita, di mana kita bekerja akan mendapatkan limpahan hal-hal positif yang kita peroleh dari perbuatan kita yang baik tadi. Tapi sebaliknya, apabila kita melakukan sesuatu yang tidak baik, karma buruk, melanggar sila dan seterusnya, tindakan kita tersebut juga akan memberikan pengaruh kepada orang lain.
So if you come to the seminar tomorrow, you'll be such a nice person. You're just such a soft wife, such a kind husband, such a respectful child. that you, when you go back home after the seminar tomorrow, or just because who you are, you will spread all that kindness and goodness to whoever you meet for the next year. That's called spreading your merits.
Jika Anda hadir pada seminar besok, maka Anda adalah seorang suami yang baik, istri yang baik, orang yang baik, karena Anda bisa menyebarkan hal-hal baik kepada begitu banyak orang di tempat itu.
So see you tomorrow.
Sampai bertemu besok. Baik, ibu bapak, saudara sekalian, terima kasih banyak dan saya mohon maaf untuk acara malam ini. Saya sendiri, I'm not satisfied myself tonight. Tapi inilah yang bisa saya berikan kepada kita pada malam ini. Sorry for the inconvenience, Ajahn, because of I'm not.
I am very content.
Okay. Thank you very much and. Terima kasih dan mohon maaf apabila ada kata-kata yang tidak berkenan. Sampai bertemu lagi pada lain kesempatan. Selamat malam, Namo Buddhaya. Thank you very much, Aja.
Marilah kita sejenak memberikan waktu kita dengan pikiran kita yang sungguh-sungguh mempersembahkan kebajikan yang telah kita lakukan, baik pada malam hari ini atau pada hari-hari yang kemarin. Kita persembahkan kepada seluruh korban bencana tsunami, baik yang ada di Indonesia maupun di negara-negara lain, tetapi juga kepada semua sanak keluarga kita yang sudah meninggal. Semoga mereka mengetahui kebajikan yang kita lakukan, dan dengan mengetahui kebajikan yang kita lakukan, semoga mereka berbahagia dalam kehidupan di alam yang selanjutnya.
Yata variwaha pura paripurenti sagarang eva meva ito dinang petanang upakapati ititang patitang tumhang kipameva samijatu sabe purentu sangapa chando panarazo yata manijo dirazo yata
Pientio
Uiva Chantu Sabarogo Vinasatu Mate Bava Vantarayo Suki Dikayuko Bava Apiva Tanhasili Sanichang Vata Pachalino Chataro Dhamma Vatanti Ayuvano Sukhang Balang Bhavatu Sabba Mangala Rakantu Sabba Devata Sabba Buddhanu Bhavena Sada Suti Bhavantu Te Bhavatu Sabba Mangala Rakantu Sabba Devata Sabba Dhamma Nubhavena Sada Soti Bhavantu Te Bhavatu Sabba Mangalang Rakantu Sabba Devata Sabba Sanghanu Bhavena Sada
Sati Bhavantute.
Kami menginformasikan Dhamma Talk ini terselenggara atas kemurahan hati Ibu Lilian, namun beliau tidak bisa hadir bersama kita pada malam hari ini karena ayahnya meninggal dunia dan besok akan dimakamkan. Seluruh jajaran pemuda Theravada Indonesia menyampaikan terima kasih kepada Ibu Lilian dan ikut bela sungkawa. Semoga almarhum ayah tercinta selalu bahagia dan dalam lindungan Sang Tirathata.
Arahang sama sambudu bhagawai.
Arahang sama sambudu bhagawai.
Budhang bhagawantang abhiwadimi.
Budhang bhagawantang abhiwadimi.
Suwagato bhagavata dhammo. Dhammang namassami. Supatipanno bhagavato savakasangho.
Supatipanno bhagavato savakasangho.
Sanghang namami.
Sanghang namami.